Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Kudzu Killers. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, can you believe it's already February, Kim?
No, it's crazy.
I know. And my roses are blooming. So I guess that's actually just because it's in time for Valentine's Day, right?
I reckon. That's my husband's birthday, so I really don't do much celebrating of Valentine's Day.
I know. I'm not sure who loses, you or him. It's like having your birthday on Christmas really sucks.
I actually don't mind it because it's sort of like a Hallmark holiday anyway, and so
I don't need
to cut flowers. You know, they're going to die. I don't need all that stuff.
No, need something.
He always brings something, but I don't really need it.
Well, it's not that you need anything. Who needs anything? We don't need anything. But meanwhile, since Valentine's Day is right around the corner, I thought maybe we should do a story on how love can get you killed if you're not careful.
In so many ways.
Oh, yeah. But this is kind of specific because, you know, you remember back in the day when we would be driving around with our boyfriends and this may or may not, I don't think it's just a Southern thing, but, you know, you're driving around with your boyfriend and they're telling you a little tale to scare you so you might snuggle up, right?
Urban legends, which sometimes have a grain of truth in them.
Well, exactly. So we've all heard tons of folk tales and horror stories about what can happen to you if you're out too late parking, i.e. code for snogging, i.e. code for necking. Y'all get the picture, right? And doing what lovers do down a secluded lover's lane. Of course, many of those gruesome tales actually come to pass with the Zodiac murders, if you think about it, right?
True. Hey, before we get good and started, let me give a shout out to our friend Jonathan from New Zealand. Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for your sweet note. And I hear you have a podcast of your own coming out soon called Fractured, a True Crime Podcast. And so I want to shout that out there for you guys to keep on the lookout for Fractured. Jonathan's a great guy and he supports us and has since the beginning. So thanks, Jonathan.
Hey, sweet Jonathan. We really do appreciate you. And we can't wait to hear your first episode and all the hundreds to come. Good luck, buddy. So meanwhile, back to the 1980s, one possible serial killer in Virginia claimed the lives of at least four couples along a certain stretch of road connected to the two historically important cities of Jamestown and Yorktown. Every year, for four straight years, numerous young couples parked on a popular lover's lane in Virginia and were later found to be brutally murdered. Like clockwork, most of the couples were killed within the same three-week time spans in the fall. These killings were known as the Colonial Parkway Murders, and they, to this day, remain unsolved.
Yikes.
I know. Sad, really, isn't it? 30 years have passed and no one has any idea who committed these crimes. The 23-mile stretch of Colonial Parkway stretches through the natural park between Yorktown and Jamestown. And this is where our story begins. The road's turnouts were often frequented by couples seeking, quote, privacy. You know, lover's lane, so to speak, right? It all began on October the 12th, 1986, when 27-year-old Kathleen Thomas, a Norfolk, Virginia stockbroker, and 21-year-old Rebecca Ann Dowski, a student at the College of William and Mary, spent most of their time together at a computer lab with friends that night. And then at some point during the evening, the two of them left the lab in order to find more private environment. So they took a drive. The lesbian couple were parked up in their Honda Civic along Colonial Parkway, where it's believed that someone approached their vehicle. The speculation of how the killer gained their trust is that he may have been disguised as a park ranger or a police officer to lure them unsuspectingly out of their car. Whatever the case, once the women had left the safety of their vehicle, the women seemed to be subdued quickly as the killer went into a sort of frenzied action. And both Kathleen and Rebecca had nylon and ligature burns on their wrists and neck that indicated attempted strangulation.
So this one person, they think, subdued both of the women?
Yes, and I was curious about that because, I mean, we're going to go through potentially 10 people here, and this person always seems to make this happen with two at a time. And the police actually are still unclear whether it's a single killer or if it's a person with an accomplice.
I mean, I suppose he could have had a gun or something and had one tie up the other one, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I'm thinking this, you know, this goes to my speculation. I'm thinking that the police do think that it was always a person in a uniform, some sort of a, you know, a park ranger or a police officer who potentially did have a firearm with him, you know, had a pistol of some sort. And so they complied. But this particular couple, their throats were slashed and they didn't have any gunfire involved here. And the slashing of their throats was from a left to right motion. So the police surmise that the killer may have been right-handed. Well, that comes into play into another couple later down the road. So 3 days later, after these ladies were killed, a jogger discovers the mutilated couple by the York River and reports it to the police. Detectives then found the woman inside of Kathleen's car. It appeared as though the killer had attempted to set the car on fire with gasoline to destroy any incriminating evidence, but that failed. And so then the car with the girls in it was pushed down an embankment towards the river where it got caught up in the brush, and that's where they found it. It's believed Kathleen Thomas struggled with her killer because a clump of the suspect's hair was found in her hand. Most likely she yanked that out while she was fighting for her life. And I opened heart and left a forever bald spot where she jerked it out, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question about that when we get to the end. But
right. Neither of these ladies had been sexually assaulted. And since their purses were found in the car, Virginia investigators ruled out robbery as a motive. It was determined the murderer may have been in his infancy and just starting out due to kind of being indecisive in the method of the way he was killing and it kind of being just all over the place. And then he couldn't destroy or the evidence or get rid of the car. To me, it just seems like he wasn't very organized at this point. And keep in mind, he pulled them both out of the car to kill them.
Well, he could have just walked up and shot them in the head or whatever, maybe. If he had a gun, if he had a real gun.
Right. But also, too, I mean, you know, it goes to, well, did he want to strangle them? I mean, that's a whole different idea behind strangling somebody. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah. And we'll get to that later on because there's another lesbian couple that are killed later as well. Anyway, and plus, my thought is that, okay, later, well, he pulled them out of the car, right, to kill them. But then later they were found back in the car when the car was set on fire. So he had to put them back in the car, you know. I'm just feeling he didn't think all this through, or I don't know.
Yeah, he's like a baby driver. He's a baby killer, you know, killer. He hasn't figured out his MO yet.
Right. It's not a smooth process. He's still like, I didn't think that through. Right. So almost a year later, on September the 19th in 1987, by the south shore of the James River in the Isle of Wight County, David Nobling, who was 20 years old, and Robin Edwards, who was 14, were last seen alive. Now, okay, let's not get into the she was 14 because, let's not get there. But they were on. Because
you know what I'm going to say.
I know what you're, yeah. Well, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But anyway, this location near Smithfield, Virginia, was approximately 20 miles due south from the first crime scene. And like the first victims, they pulled their vehicle into a remote Lover's Lane turnout. And when the car was ultimately discovered, the windows had been rolled partially down, again, sort of suggesting that their assailant had approached under the guise of authority like before, you know? So once the couple had been, again, coaxed out of the vehicle, the killer marched them into the woods, and this time he did execute them with a gun.
Okay.
So this is a little different. A passerby found David's abandoned black Ford Ranger, and this time it was found inside the Ragged Islands Wildlife Refuge. Now, I'm not familiar with this part of the world, so I'm just kind of going on that all this stuff is close by. It's sort of in a beautiful area where people go to not just park, but they go there to hike and bike and jog and camp and things like that. Right. And it's on a river, so, you know, it's not full of tons of people, but people like outdoorsy stuff are there, you know?
Right.
So Again, his truck was found with its driver's side door open and its radio on, and it still had the keys in the ignition. So that makes you think, okay, they must have yanked them out pretty quick, you know?
Right.
3 days after this discovery on September the 23rd, a jogger by the name of Lewis Ford stood about a mile from the refuge's parking lot, and in a grasslandy sort of path, he saw their bodies. So, because it's kind of hilly and, you know what I mean? So could he, right. Whatever, he could see them. When they went and looked for the bodies, Robin had been shot in the back of the head, execution style, and David had been shot in the head, but he also had a bullet wound in his shoulder. So the police think that the second wound suggested that David had tried to flee his attacker, but was ultimately subdued.
Tried to flee him or attack him or something, yeah.
Right, that, you know, there was some sort of scuffle because, remember, she, you know, he's 20, she's 14. He probably just popped her and that was that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this made them the second set of victims of what the police were starting to suspect to be a serial killer. Nearly 7 months elapsed before the murderer resurfaces. And that was on April the 9th, 1988, where Cassandra Lee Haley, who was 18, and Keith Call, who was 20, were enjoying a first date together at the University Square of Newport News by the northern shore of the James River, after which they headed home together at approximately 1:30 a.m. Well, we all know, as our mama say, ain't nothing good happens after 10 o'clock.
I think mine was midnight, but yeah, we get it.
And as us sassing back, we said, well, we could do anything before 10 o'clock that we could do after 10 o'clock.
Usually.
Well, this would be the last time that they were seen alive. Mm. And in an unusual set of circumstances, Keith's father was traveling to work the following day along the Colonial Parkway when he spotted Keith's car parked up on the highway. Mm-hmm. The driver's side, again, was open, and the keys were in the ignition. But the couple was nowhere to be found. Just like the previous murder of David and Robin, you know, the keys, the ignition, the door. And his daddy thought maybe they had gone, kind of ventured out to the beach area, because I guess there's a beach area and even close to all that. So he didn't really report the sighting to the police, and he continued and went on to work. However, things were about to take a sinister turn later that day. So a short time after Keith's father had left the scene, a park ranger reported the vehicle abandoned and the police were called. So Keith's car was a red Toyota Celica, and it was discovered only 3 miles from where the bodies of Robin and David were found. Inside the car, the investigators found Keith's wallet on the dashboard. The glove box was open. And like the first double murder, Cassandra's purse was found in plain sight. So they're not thinking this is robbery.
Right. It's not if they're not taking anything, basically.
During an inspection of the vehicle, the couple's clothes were discovered on the car seats.
Oh. The dad didn't see this?
Now, wait. That's just it. That's unusual because Keith's father later specified that there were no clothes present within the vehicle earlier that day when he found the car.
Mm.
So that's kind of weird, isn't it?
That's very weird.
So a thorough search ensued, of course, including the nearby river, thinking that the couple may have gone swimming and maybe they drowned. But there was no trace still of the couple. Actually, they never found these two kids. They never found their bodies. They never found anything more than that.
Well, they got thrown over in the James River, probably, and who knows where they ended up.
Swept away, more than likely. Mm-hmm. But let's take a little break here and come back with 4 more murders and what the cops think about all this.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Leave the Lights On is a true crime podcast with a paranormal twist. Join creator Eliza and her co-host as they explore terrifying true stories and chilling crimes. Growing up, Eliza had an odd obsession with the darkest desires of humanity and an insatiable curiosity about the afterlife. Now, each week, Eliza brings you tales that will make you want to lock your doors, hide in your room, and of course, leave the lights on. Available on Spotify and Apple Podcast.
So it seems the killer took a little break for about 18 months until October the 19th of 1989.
Maybe in jail or something like that?
Well, it's possible because later on there's a suspect, but they rule him out, but it's still so iffy. In 1989, two hunters discover the decomposed remains of another young couple by the name of Anna Marie Phelps, who was 18, and Daniel Lauer, who was 20. Anna Marie and Daniel were found on a secluded logging road near Interstate 64 in New Kent County, 65 miles from their starting point. Now, they were on a trip. They were going on a trip. I don't know. I don't remember where their destination was, but I do remember it said it was something like 200 miles away.
Okay.
That was the gist of it. So when they found them, they weren't that far from home. And Daniel had a gold 1972 Chevy Nova. It was found facing northbound, which would have been the wrong direction given that the couple was reportedly heading towards Virginia Beach when they disappeared. So it was suspected that the couple knew each other intimately, and even though Anna Maria was said to be dating Daniel's brother, Clint, I know, so there was a little bit of hanky-panky and some subterfuge going on.
Yeah.
So items within the vehicle appeared to have remained untouched, apart from a single blanket that was missing. Again, their money hadn't been taken, which only served to increase the apprehension by the police that this had all the hallmarks of all the other four murders.
Right.
And they, too, were found a few miles from the rest stop on a logging trail hidden in dense undergrowth covered by the missing blanket. A forensic examination concluded the couple were likely killed elsewhere and then probably back along the trail, brought back with the killer having to use the car to dispose of the bodies.
So he's getting... Every time he's getting a little more developed, he's getting a little more sophisticated about his murders and what he's doing to hide them, I guess.
I think so. I do. I think he's learning, you know, as he goes. He's like, oh, man, you know, I should have done that. Well, okay. And now it's just becoming a little more, I want to say, second nature. Anyway, so this couple, due to the advanced stages of decomposition, the method of murder in both instances was difficult to really determine. But in all of these cases, there was no sign of sexual assault.
Okay.
Even though it was concluded that Daniel had suffered stab wounds to his body and an autopsy did find knife marks on Anna Maria's bones.
So they were shot or they were killed by knife?
They don't know.
Oh, because they were so decomposed they couldn't tell? Okay.
Yeah, they couldn't tell. That the only way they even knew about the knife marks was because of, you know, it was on bones. Yeah. And remember, that's how they tried to kill the first two girls, was they slit their throats, you know.
Right.
So we're moving on to the next couple. In the May of 1996, another lesbian couple, Julianne Williams, who was 24, and Lolly Winans, 26, were on a two-week camping break in the Shenandoah National Park west of Richmond. And they were enjoying the scenery and each other's company. And that's when they were interrupted by this person who killed them. Mm-hmm. The double murders of the three couples, as well as the disappearance of Cassandra Haley and Keith Call, are almost always considered part of the Colonial Parkway murders. Another double murder included in the Colonial Parkway murders is this murder of Julianne Williams and Lolly Winans. Some people don't always include, but some people do. It's a little bit confusing. They really do feel like the people they never found were included. All total, it was still 10 people.
Okay.
And five couples.
Okay.
Because that Sunday that they began their two-week backpacking through the Shenandoah National Park, they had their golden retriever, Taj, with them. And the first night they got there, they pitched their tent near a mountain stream just a few feet away from a horse trail. By May the 31st, 1996, Julianne's father, Thomas Williams, reported his daughter missing. The Virginia police and the park rangers went into action and soon found Julie's abandoned car, and Taj was just kind of like wandering around free without his leash, which is odd.
Right.
So a day later after that, on June the 1st, the bodies of Julianne and Lolly were found by the rangers near the Skyline Lodge. Now, both women had been bound and gagged with duct tape and partially undressed, and their throats were slit so deeply that they were almost decapitated. Mm. So I think that he's getting more frenzied, more intense, deliberate,
well, and
maybe.
And he's kind of throwing in the sexual stuff, too, if he's starting to undress the women, you know, or and the clothes of the other couple were found in their car and stuff like that. That's, you know.
Well, I'm going to touch on what one of the, not a detective, but another, a private investigator has a theory about this. And I don't think it was so much sexual after hearing his theory as it was maybe to try to humiliate the girls. Mm. I don't think it was a sexual kink on his part. More of a hate crime, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
So again, there was no sexual assault and there was no robbery. So both of those things were ruled out as a motive. And they were also identical to the first couple, Kathleen and Rebecca, where the killer slit their throats from left to right.
Right.
So although tempting, there are reasons to suggest that Julianne Williams and Lolly Winans were not victims of the Colonial Parkway murderer. People like to put them in there.
Oh, it sounds the same to me.
Well, they were all so close by and it all right. happened, you know, similar places. And so even though they weren't killed near their vehicle, which is one of the reasons they point to, they were found near the Colonial Parkway. Mm-hmm. Since the early 2000s, FBI agents have zeroed in on convicted killer Daryl Rice as the man responsible for the murder of Julianna Williams and Lolly Winans. However, due to an eyewitness who picked out another man in a photo lineup, Rice was never charged with the murders, and he is still a free man.
Okay, now I'm going to throw in that question I had right at the very beginning, and maybe you're going to answer it here in a minute. But The first couple, the girl had a handful of hair. Mm-hmm. She snatched a handful of hair out. Did they ever do any mitochondrial DNA testing on that or anything to see if they could match it to anyone?
Well, not at this point that we're talking about. At that time, I think that that's coming around even now, you know, like now.
Okay.
In 2021.
Like they're doing the ancestry kind of ancestral DNA kind of look, maybe?
Well, yeah, they're kind of hopeful about it. And I'll tell you some more about that in a minute. Okay.
Okay. I just, yeah, it was bugging me. So
of course it was. And I knew that was your question from the get-go. So I'll tell you about it in a minute. Okay. In 2010, on behalf of the victims' families, former Milwaukee homicide detective Steve Spigola was asked to investigate the Colonial Parkway murders as a private detective. Spigola asserts that not all of the Colonial Parkway murders were the work of one man. He felt that the murders of Kathleen Thomas and Rebecca Dowski looked like a hate crime motivated by the killer's hatred of the lesbian couple. Now, it sounds to me like the killer possibly knew them.
Okay, yeah.
But he never made that clear. And also the same motive for the murders of Julianne Williams and Lolly Winans. Both double murders may have been carried out by the same killer. But again, he wasn't clear about that. As for the other killings, Spigola said that Knobling and Edwards were murdered following a robbery, while Daniel and Anna Marie were killed by someone impersonating a police officer.
So he really doesn't think many of them are related except for the lesbian couples who were killed.
That's what I'm getting.
He doesn't think the others are related.
That's what I'm getting, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to respectfully disagree with that from what I know now, but keep going.
Well, I'm kind of disagreeing too, but there's a whole lot of speculation out there. So for years, investigators assigned to the Colonial Parkway case suggested that the killer may have posed as a park ranger or a law enforcement officer. Then in 2010, news broke that a major suspect in the case was a real police officer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So during the string of murders between 1986 and 1989, Fred Atwell was a deputy sheriff in Virginia. Some of the victim's family members rushed to Atwell's defense when his name was first announced in 2010. But a year later, in 2011, Atwell was arrested in Gwinnett County, Georgia, in conjunction with the robbery that occurred in Roanoke County, Virginia. Atwell was charged with stealing $60 from a financial advisor. I'm thinking, huh?
Really? $60?
That's what I read. And I'm like,
he risked his career and everything else for $60?
Well, I couldn't find that detail a little bit more specifically about the amount of money. I would think maybe it should have said 60K and maybe that was a typo, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering.
I know, but anyway, that was the number that I saw. So meanwhile, also in 2011, Atwell was accused of scamming the families of the Colonial Parkway victims via a fake raffle. Atwell claimed that the raffle was intended to raise money for a reward in the case, but later admitted that he continued on with the raffle despite failing to get prizes from a local car dealership.
Yeah, something tells me he didn't try real hard.
It sounds fishy to me. With a big old fishing hook. So the question remains, are these five cases interconnected? All being committed by a lone serial killer? And the investigators and profilers remain divided on the Colonial Park murders, but the families aren't. They just want justice. They're united in wanting justice.
Well, yeah, of course they are, because their children are dead.
Now, what I was going to mention before about the DNA that you were asking about, that has come up recently. And as recently as there is a brand new show coming out on the 11th, I believe. I want to say it's the E! Entertainment site, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, they're looking into this from that angle of the DNA this time, because they just have more bells and whistles, basically, you know, to do it. But just remember, that was a long time ago, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know if anything's been compromised. There's a few other things that kind of go into this. There was apparently some sort of note that one of these detectives had that was working on a case and kind of dismissed it. And I don't know. It just seems like, from what all I read, for as many people that were dropping, why the police didn't do more, I kind of feel like they might have been protecting one of their own.
You kind of have to wonder that. Yeah. I looked it up and $60 is correct.
Oh, my gosh. My goodness. Isn't that terrible? Why would you risk your career for $60?
Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of agree that it might have, they might have been protecting. It happens. It happens a lot more than we know, I think. Not that I don't respect police officers, because I do, because they got a tremendously difficult job and they've got a lot to deal with, and it's hard on them and their families. But I think there are times when they do cover each other's asses, and this might have been one of them.
Well, this is in this one particular case. I'm not going to blanket anything about the police. I am fully a supporter of the police, and I'm not trying to throw water on them at all. This is one particular situation where, from the facts that I'm looking at, that's just my judgment call. But they just don't know. They keep trying to find out details. They keep trying to find out information. And that's really, you know, this is it.
Well, I mean, I don't see why they think they might not be connected. Just because the two couples were lesbians, that doesn't really mean that much. I mean, one could have had shorter hair and they mistook them for a guy and a girl couple when they pulled them over or whatever happened. You know, it's...
Right.
I don't think you can exclude them from this, just from what we're talking about now. I don't see why you would. It sounds like the first couple was the first and the second couple, you know.
I think that was an easy out, to be honest with you.
Probably.
Kind of like to throw a red herring into and just an easy excuse, because, you know, just like the Zodiac Killer. I mean, this looked to me like it was more about couples.
Yeah, it seems to absolutely be all about couples and robbery. I don't know that that's really a motive.
No, I don't think so either. I think this is all about couples. And
yeah, the rest of them had their money in their wallets left and their purses left there. So to me, it's not about money. He might have taken some because he needed some gas money on the way back home or something at one point.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it could be as basic as someone who doesn't, you know, as jealous as can be. I'm going to kill couples. I mean, I'm not a killer, so I don't know how they think. But hey, these are people that are obviously in love with each other, or it's new, or it's, you know, they're smitten with each other. But they're obviously couples that have gone out to show each other affection, shall we say, you know? Well, so
yeah, and he could have been mad at his old girlfriend or something, because I was watching I was watching an episode of 2020 or something like that the other day, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the killer. I want to say he was the East Area Rapist, I think, is who it was, and he was doing it because he was pissed at his ex-fiance,
right?
You know, and he would grumble her name while he was raping these women.
Wow, horrible.
And so you know, it's very likely it could be some spurned lover of somebody, and he just was not liking the idea of couples being out parking. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm seeing. And it goes back to all those stories that we always used to kid about when we were, you know, kids. It's like, okay, we might get killed by the roadside strangler or whatever, but there it is.
The guy with the hooked hands gonna
for
come
real
scratch on your car.
Exactly.
I did have some boys take some of us girls out one time to a cemetery that was out in the middle of a rice field. And as we got out of the car to go see the old cemetery over there, one of them decided to start up his chainsaw and chase us in the sand.
Oh my gosh.
That's they thought stupid. It was really funny, but the stupid thing was he forgot to take the chain off the chainsaw. So if he'd fallen, he would have.
What a goober. He'd have been lacking.
something. Yeah, he'd have been lacking something. Yeah, so but anyway, yeah, you know, guys do that to get you to cuddle with them. And
Well, I think this is straight up about lovers who are out and somebody that was not liking lovers. This is really
what
I think.
What
and I think it's
like
the same person, too.
Yes,
I do too.
I believe it's the same person that did all five couples and maybe more. Who knows?
Well, exactly. So anyway, you know, it's coming up here this week that there's going to be more about it out there that I was a little surprised to hear, but I'm anxious to hear a little bit more of these people that are coming out are going to have some more information for us. But so, hey, tell us what you guys think, because we have a brand spanking new website with all the bells and whistles. Thanks to Miss Kim.
It's got a couple of problems I'm working on, but you can leave us a voicemail, people. We want to hear your voices. You hear ours every week, twice a week, or three times a week if you listen to our paranormal podcast, and leave us a voicemail. You can leave us one. All you got to do is click on the little microphone in the right-hand side of the website page and talk to us. We'd like to hear you.
It's at kudzukillers.com. So please call us. Please do. We're whining now. Please. Actually, we already have one show on the books coming up that one of our listeners has requested. So, hey, you too can be one of those shows. If you want something, you know, all you got to do is ask. Like we say in Memphis, hey, closed mouth, don't get fed now. So.
And I want to do another shout out to Haley Wilkes, who is the person who sent us a message on our contact sheet on the new website and told us about this story. So
that's
what we want you guys to do. And thanks, Haley.
Thank you, Haley. That's right. We'll do it as soon as possible. But I promise we will do it. And see, you too can have your name spoken by our very lips.
Yeah. We will shout out your name.
Exactly.
Please leave a voicemail. I want your voicemail in that. I check that stupid message box every day and it says empty.
I'm going to have to call Kim by myself just so she gets a voicemail. I mean, how long has it been since y'all have heard the word voicemail? Come on now.
Hey, you don't even have to call a number or anything.
You just click a button.
On a mic. Yeah.
Come on now. So, anyway, for something a bit more fun to take the edge off, y'all join us too on Mondays for our paranormal show. What's it called, Kim?
Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
A Crucifix. Where? We have a laugh at each other and all sorts of weird things that go bump in the night. But, let us know if y'all know more about this or if y'all happen to see that special. I don't know if I'll get to or not because I'm busy with other stuff. But in the meantime, don't bury the bodies without us.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.